We have our first two UEFA Champions League semi-finalists. Paris Saint-Germain hold on to progress despite a Bayern victory in the French capital.
The revenge is sweet for Paris Saint-Germain. It's agony for the champions. They've gone. Paris Saint-Germain advance to the semi-final.
While Chelsea do enough to reach the last 4-2.
But there is the full-time whistle, and Chelsea celebrate in Seville. They're through to the semi-finals. Porto winners on the night, but it's Chelsea through to the semis for the first time since 2014.
Stay with us for all the best analysis and reaction from both of Tuesday's second leg encounters right here on the UEFA Champions League podcast. Welcome along, I'm Rob Daly, and with me to reflect on tonight's two quarter-final second legs are commentators John Bradley and Phil Blacker. Hello, gents. And we're joined by European football expert Kevin Hatcher. Kevin, we didn't quite get our comebacks tonight.
Not quite, but you have to give Porto and Bayern Munich incredible credit for the way they fought, for the way they pushed, for the way they believed they could turn these ties around. And they didn't miss by much, especially Bayern. They will feel that if they'd made better decisions in the final third, maybe they could have squeaked through. But immense credit also to the teams that held them off, Chelsea and Paris.
Paris nil, Bayern 1 on the night, 3-3 on aggregate, away goals, seeing the French champions through. Chelsea nil, Porto 1, but Chelsea going through 2-1 on aggregate. Let's get our three-word match reports from our commentators. John Bradley, you were on matters at the Parc des Princes.
Yes, and Paris Saint-Germain going through and scraping through, and as it says famously at one end of their stadium, ici c'est Paris.
And Phil Blacker was watching Chelsea versus Porto. Phil?
I'll go with stunner too late. It needed a very special goal from Porto to breach the Chelsea defence, but it just came too late to give them any chance really of going through.
It certainly did. Okay, more from Phil shortly, but let's start in France where Paris took on Bayern. It was 3-2 to the Parisians after the first leg. Could the reigning European champions turn things around? John Bradley describes the action.
Neymar, who steps from right to left and then goes for a right-footed curler and hits the crossbar. Oh, it was beautiful. Opened his body up and guided the ball towards the top corner, and it just wouldn't quite come down for him. A moment of inspiration and magic, but not the first goal. Mbappe goes again. Now Neymar's made a really good break. This is Neymar. This could be the tie. Oh, he's hit the post now. Crossbar and then post in the matter of minutes from Neymar. And Bayern München are still in this tie. Coman again, level with the edge of the penalty area, goes for the byline, crosses left footed. Thomas Muller, and then the shot, saved by Nelas, and Choupo-Moting has scored from a matter of a metre out. It's the former Paris Saint-Germain player who turns the ball home after Keylor Navas couldn't hold on to David Alaba's shot. And hello, we might have a little story on our hands here. Paris Saint-Germain nil, Bayern München 1 towards Mbappe. And he goes towards Angel Di Maria. Wonderful first look across the face of goal and put behind by Boateng. Neymar was sliding in. He tried to get there with his right foot. He tried to get there with his left foot. And agonisingly for Paris Saint-Germain, it evaded both of his legs. Bayern have the ball and they're moving inside. Oh, wonderful from Sané. Across the face of goal and wide. Oh, it's a wonderful piece of skill from Sané. And as his teammates came running in, no one could get that. But there's to be no more time. And the revenge is sweet for Paris Saint-Germain. It's agony for the champions. They've gone. Paris Saint-Germain advanced to the semi-final.
So Bayern will not defend their title this season. We know how difficult it is to win back-to-back European Cups, Champions Leagues. Real Madrid have done it recently, but Bayern have faltered at the quarter-final stage. Kev and John with me. John, what will this result mean to Paris Saint-Germain? There were great celebrations at the end.
Yeah, absolutely huge. And I think that everyone knew the magnitude of what had happened. You saw Neymar bouncing around with great celebrations. He does live every moment of these UEFA Champions League ties. These are why he was brought to this club and to win this competition. The same with Kylian Mbappe. Yes, winning the French league is a big thing for them, but the owners want to make them a worldwide brand, and to do that
you have to win the biggest trophy, and that is what the UEFA Champions League is. That's why the likes of Mbappe and Neymar, Marquinhos and co are all here. And, you know, that's a major statement they've made by knocking out Bayern Munich over these two legs, particularly after what happened in Lisbon in a final that they never really got going in and never played their best football. It does really rankle with them to now. So to get that little bit of revenge and to put the record straight now to move through to, you know, what could be a mouth-watering semi-final. Well, whichever side they get, it'll be a mouth-watering semi-final, Manchester City or Borussia Dortmund. But if it is Manchester City, it will be almost as though the new powerhouses of the competition, and one of them will go through to the final to meet one of the more traditional clubs.
I thought it was really important over the two legs that the big players stepped up and put their mark on the tie, and they did. If you look at that first leg in Germany, I thought Neymar was terrific, had a big impact on a couple of the goals. Kylian Mbappe, we know how deadly he was in front of goal in that first game. And I thought it was very, very important in this second leg that Mbappe constantly was looking to run in behind, because it made it difficult for Bayern to really squeeze and to really have a spell where you felt Paris were under siege. And even though Bayern had bright moments, they didn't consistently make the right decisions, and therefore they couldn't apply the same pressure that a Bayern team normally would. We've seen in the Bundesliga, we've seen in the Champions League, games where you just know Bayern are going to score. Games where they know they're going to break down the opposition. Never really felt like that. I felt they would have snatched something if they got that late second goal. So I think over the two legs, I think Paris probably did shade it. And I think they shaded it because as a team, they worked incredibly hard, but their top players, their superstars, showed up.
I suppose it's a good point, Kev, because whenever, even when Bayern had spells of possession in the Paris half, probably always in the back of their mind, and we saw in the final 10, if we give the ball away, Neymar and Mbappe, with that phenomenal understanding, pace and quality, are going to hurt us. And we did have, I think into the final 10, the Mbappe offside goal.
Yeah, as well. And I think, had it not been for Luke Hernandez, who I thought had his best game for Bayern by quite some distance in this game, they would have scored, I think, because he came up with some excellent defending. But I thought it was good coaching as well, because Pochettino brought on Moise Kean. That gave them more of a presence in attack, gave Bayern another thing to think about. And it meant that Bayern's rhythm was a bit disrupted and they couldn't quite build that pressure. I also want to give praise to Colin Dagba, the young right-back, because there was a moment when he was yellow carded for diving in on Kingsley Coman, and I felt this is where Bayern can take advantage of that. This is where they can isolate him, run at him, maybe draw that second yellow card, and Paris are in big trouble. He did not put a foot wrong for the rest of that game. He was immaculate.
John, no Lewandowski, of course, no Serge Gnabry coming back from COVID-19, no Leon Goretzka, who would be close to their player of the season, maybe, at points. Do you think this tie would have been different had those three players been available tonight?
You know, it's easy to speak with, you know, hypothetical situations. What they didn't do was manage the game without those players, and that's where they've gone out, really. You know, it's very hard to replace players of that stature, players who are so important to your team. But when they're not there, you've got to learn to play without them. You've got to learn that the players, you know, who come in have got to step up, but other players in the team have got to step up. And they didn't really do enough. And what Paris Saint-Germain said is, look, we will sit in, we will wait for you, we'll let you have the ball, and then we'll strangle the ball from you, and then we'll really hit you on the counter-attack. It's amazing that Paris Saint-Germain didn't score in this game. Neymar could have scored five, quite simply. You know, we saw Mbappe have one chalked off and a couple that were defended well or kept out by some good play by Manuel Neuer, where he came from his penalty area, particularly late on as well. So they didn't quite do enough. Choupo-Moting got his goal with the first real quality moment of the game, but there wasn't enough quality in the final third in the end for them to get those two goals. Yes, there were half chances. Yes, there were moments, but there were more moments at the other end. And really, Paris will be annoyed that it went to the wire because they had so many good chances.
I agree with John in the sense that Bayern had to make do with what they had, and they still put out very good teams across both legs. But I quite happily say that if they had Goretzka and Lewandowski and Gnabry in both games, I think they win the tie. And I think they probably... It's not anywhere near as close.
But it's speaking in hypotheticals, isn't it? We know they're not there, so you've got to...
Absolutely, absolutely. But what... The reason I say that is because there will be an inquest, there will be a lot of scrutiny on Bayern now because they've gone out of Europe. What I would say is that's a team without three of its best players over the two legs, and they've pushed an excellent Paris team that admittedly didn't have Marquinhos in the second leg, didn't have Verratti in the tie. So, you know, there's hypotheticals on that side too. But does this mean that Bayern are suddenly falling into disrepair? Does this suddenly mean that there should be some kind of root and branch review into what's going on at Bayern? No. They've pushed a very good Paris team all the way over two legs without arguably the best centre-forward in the world right now, one of the best box-to-box midfielders in the world right now, and a very good, proven Champions League performer in Serge Gnabry. So I think Bayern come away from it, with a lot of credit.
And on the counter side to that, when, as we expect, if Real Madrid go through against Liverpool in 24 hours, and we say no Carvajal, no Vazquez, no Ramos, no Rafael Varane, no Marcelo, and they go through, and we say, well, they've gone through without their back four, plus another, then we say they deserve an amazing amount of credit for the way they've handled that situation. And ultimately, Bayern haven't done enough over the two legs with the absence of the key players that they've got to go through. And I think, as Kevin says, you know, that's where the inquest will start, isn't it?
Jerome Boateng, by the way, was confirmed by Hasan Salihamidžić, I think, last week.
Yeah.
He's leaving in the summer. We know already David Alaba's confirmed he's leaving, both coming to the end of their contracts. And Javi Martinez came on as a striker late on. You've seen him do that before, Kev.
Yeah.
They've turned to him with...
To good effect.
Yeah, his contract is up at the end of the season. So there is a degree of change at Bayern. And, of course, there is a situation whereby... Hansi Flick as well, Kev, has been relatively conservative on how long he's going to stay as Bayern head coach.
Yeah, so in his press conference on Friday before the Union Berlin game, he was asked, as he has been many times recently, about whether he would say he was going to stay at Bayern beyond the end of this season. He refused to answer those questions. He said, whenever you ask me about this, I am now just going to say... Next question.
Okay, so we'll wait and see what happens with Hansi Flick as well. For Paris now, John, obviously with Kylian Mbappe and Neymar in the side, and Verratti, you'd imagine, back for the semi-finals as well, they'll be backing themselves to go one step further. You just wonder to what extent the experience, as you mentioned earlier in the show, of having lost a final will help them get over the hump of eventually winning a first ever European Cup Champions League.
Yeah, I'm a great believer in learning from that, from the defeats, and moving on and taking, you know, the good from it and learning and helping you a year later. And I think Bayern did that, 2012, 2013, and Liverpool did that after losing to Real Madrid and then going on to win it the year later. And we've seen other sides do it down the years as well, to lose the final one year and win it the year after. And I think that Paris Saint-Germain have put themselves in a good position. I also think that you talk about that as well, though, and that Mauricio Pochettino's in that situation, of course, having been a loser with Tottenham. But I'd also mention Thomas Tuchel as well, having been the coach, of course, of Paris last year. And he's going to be a real threat with Chelsea, isn't he, when they go through to the Final Four.
I think John's right about learning from defeats. But I think on the flip side of that, you learn so much from these tight victories as well. Because when you're in that tight situation, let's say, you know, they face Dortmund or they face Manchester City in the semi-final, and say it goes all the way and it goes down to the last 10 minutes of the second leg, or it goes to extra time, they can look at each other and say, we've done this. We've beaten the European champions.
Absolutely, yeah.
We've beaten the German champions. We've done this. Now, if this had gone against them, this game, I think that would have been massively damaging. Because I think I totally accept what John's saying about the final and all of the kind of situations they've been through. But I still put Paris in Manchester City's category. And what I mean by that is, that's a club that's picked up scars from this competition, that has had these tight ties. They've not gone through. They've piled up the hard luck stories year upon year. and it's about coming through that. This is a massive step forward.
It's also the pressure, Kevin, is it, that these two clubs are under?
Yeah.
You talk about the mental scarring, but it's also down to the fact of everyone's expecting, or was expecting, domination by now of Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester City of the UEFA Champions League, as well as their domestic leagues. And when we talk about learning from the final defeat, it is mainly, you know, the build-up to the final and going into the final. I was very lucky to spend time with the Liverpool players after they won against Tottenham. And the players said what helped us was the week in the build-up. We knew everything to expect. We knew everything that was going to happen. We knew all the demands on us and our time, and that's where it helps them, you know, to tune into the final. And I think that even the Tottenham players themselves weren't used to, you know, and couldn't get their heads around the actual build-up to the final, and obviously started very slow in that final, didn't they?
Okay, more from John and Kev very shortly. Paris Saint-Germain through, of course, they will face either Manchester City or Dortmund, and we'll talk about that tie shortly. Next, let's turn our attention to Chelsea against Porto. Here's a reminder of what happened on Tuesday night.
Still plenty in the penalty area for Porto as the deep cross comes in. Spectacular attempt and a goal back. Surely too late though, but Porto have finally made the breakthrough with only seconds to go in the second leg. Mehdi Taremi with a stunning strike. Acrobatic, wonderful technique. Chelsea 0, Porto 1 on the night. 2-1 Chelsea on aggregate, but only seconds to go. Still on we play. But there is the full-time whistle, and Chelsea celebrate in Seville. They're through to the semi-finals. The goal for Porto came too late, a stunning goal from Mehdi Taremi. But Chelsea had only a further few seconds to survive, having shut out their opponents for the 90-plus minutes that had preceded that brilliant overhead kick. Porto winners on the night, but it's Chelsea through to the semis for the first time since 2014. They await either Liverpool or Real Madrid. Chelsea 0, Porto 1 on the night. Chelsea 2, Porto 1 on aggregate.
Heard Phil Blacker there, and he joins us now on Matchday Live. Phil, first of all, what a goal. What a goal from Taremi.
Unbelievable strike. I say probably with very little hesitation, it's the best goal that mattered absolutely very little that I've ever seen, I think.
The most brilliant inconsequential goal ever.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's got to be right up there in that particular category, because it was so out of context with what had gone before as well. Chelsea had kept Porto at arm's length fairly comfortably for the 90-plus minutes that preceded it, as I mentioned, which ultimately was enough for them, of course. But if Porto are to go out as they do, it was some way to exit the competition with that as a memory for Mehdi Taremi.
Phil, do you think Sergio Conceição, the Porto coach, will now regret not starting with Taremi? Because it seems to have followed a similar pattern to the first leg, in the sense that Porto pressed high, as they did in that sensational victory against Juventus. They had possession, but they just didn't have that cutting edge in attack. Do you think if Taremi had played with Moussa Marega, might have given Chelsea a few more problems?
I really do, and I was surprised that we didn't see him earlier, given the way the game was going, because it was following a fairly familiar pattern, you're right, from the first leg. It was understandable, in a sense, the selection decision at the start of the game. But when you saw how Chelsea were approaching it, and it was very much a risk limitation exercise from them. There were a couple of misplaced passes in the first half that presented Porto with two chances of note. But otherwise, that was it. Everything else Chelsea dealt with comfortably. They took in their stride, but they weren't committing players forward. They weren't coming out of their shell. They were content with the way the game was going to keep things under control without taking those risks. So I think when that became evident, which it did fairly early on in the piece, I really expected to see Taremi earlier than we did. I thought he'd come on at half-time. It was just after the hour mark when he was introduced. No coincidence, maybe, that just 2 minutes later was when Porto finally managed their first attempt on target in the game. It was his header, albeit after a slick build-up down the right. But he certainly provided something else and provided support for Marega, who put a huge shift in over the course of the game. He got through so much work without fashioning any chances of his own or really being provided the service. So it wasn't quite working in that respect. Chelsea had it under control. Taremi did provide another option. And then, of course, at the end, he showed what he could do, but it was too late by then. Just two attempts on target in the game
for Porto in a game where, of course, they knew at the start that they had to score at least twice to have any chance of going through. And the second of those wasn't until the 94th minute with that stunning overhead kick into the top corner. So he did make a difference when he came on. Not quite enough for Porto, but yeah, it was a surprise that we didn't see him certainly earlier, if not from the start.
Sort of Wayne Rooney against Manchester City-esque, wasn't it, that overhead kick. A super goal for Taremi. Of course, he scored in the round of 16. That brilliant, famous win for Porto over Juve on away goals. They came through a tough group with Manchester City as well, and their goal scorer, Mehdi Taremi, is proud of their run.
When we are starting to Champions League, I think we did great for this title. And we proved of ourselves because we had a lot of good game, also this one. But we beat a little bit unlucky. If we had some chances, maybe we're going to next one. But this football, this part of football, is normal.
Okay, so Porto head out at this stage. And for Chelsea now, Phil, you mentioned it's been some time since they reached the semi-finals. What will this mean to their fans and to Thomas Tuchel?
Oh, it's a huge sign of progress, I think, already that Tuchel has made since taking over this team in January. The bigger picture that you alluded to, first time in seven seasons that Chelsea have got to the semi-finals, and they will be pleased with their dominance overall in the tie in terms of game management, I think, not necessarily in terms of possession, because Porto had more of that over the two legs, certainly, but they were limited to very few chances. It was a very professional performance from Chelsea. Tuchel will be delighted. The only slight blot, of course, the concession of the goal at the end. It's their first defeat in this competition this season, only his second defeat in charge of the club actually since taking over, but he won't be too concerned by that statistic in the context that it came. So through to the semis, an FA Cup semi-final, of course, domestically to come against Manchester City at Wembley at the weekend, very much back in the mix to qualify for this competition again next season through the Premier League. The top four is going to take some reaching, but it's still within their grasp. What this result does is just keep things bubbling along now. They're still challenging on three fronts, and certainly I think the Chelsea supporters, if offered this position when Tuchel was appointed in January after a disappointing run under Frank Lampard at the time, they would have absolutely snapped your hand off for this. So progress has certainly been made this season. And longer term, Chelsea are a club that expect to be, aren't they, in this kind of position. And Thomas Tuchel didn't shy away from it before the game. He's not here to win trophies in 2 or 3 years' time. He's been brought in to win trophies now, and they will feel that they can go all the way in this competition.
Yeah, it was interesting. Tuchel got an 18-month contract, that he agreed to an 18-month contract. He's acknowledging that the pressure is on immediately, and he is delivering at Stamford Bridge. Let's hear from him now.
I think we defended very, very well. We deserved absolutely a clean sheet. We had the better chances, not a lot, better chances, better half chances. We could not finish it off with a goal or two goals, so we had to hang in there, and the guys did that. And so it overall, we are deserved to beat Porto, and was a tough 180 minutes.
I think. Did you say it was three goals they've conceded now, Phil, in this campaign? Is that right? No, they didn't concede against Atletico, obviously, in the round of 16 either.
No, they conceded twice in the group stage, and then the one right at the end on Tuesday.
Extraordinary. I mean, this is what you need, really, in the Champions League. You do need to be able to keep clean sheets. And what Thomas Tuchel's doing defensively, are you surprised, actually, having seen Tuchel a lot of Mainz and Dortmund, especially covering the Bundesliga, are you surprised how quickly he's got this team defensively solid?
No, because I think he's a coach that gives you structure. I think he's a world-class coach. I've believed that for quite some time. I think that's why Paris brought him in. And what he's very good at is getting players to buy into what he wants very early on. He knew that he had quality players at his disposal. And Frank Lampard, while I have a huge amount of respect for his playing career and what he's done so far as a coach, never really was able to put a structure in place for those Chelsea players in which they could thrive. You listen to the Chelsea players now and they'll tell you that they know their roles. They know exactly what they have to do with the ball, without the ball. I think that midfield area is very important, whether it's Kovacic and Jorginho or Conte and one of those two. He tends to change it depending on what he thinks the opposition are going to do. But they have quality players in that area, and everything comes from that because they protect the back three and they also get the attack moving. And so in every area of that team, everybody knows what their role is.
OK, let's hear from the Chelsea captain, Cesar Azpilicueta, who said they had to work hard for the result.
The team showed a great spirit. We fought really hard. Attacking players ran a lot. We know that Porto, every time made the games very difficult to the opponents. They don't let you play. They are very aggressive. So we had to adapt. We had to fight. I think the team showed that spirit. And when you want to get through, you have to get through. It doesn't matter how. Of course, we are very honest and we know that we can play better. But sometimes it's the game to dig in, to fight together. And I think the team showed that spirit in the two games.
It would be extraordinary, Phil, if they were to go all the way to the final in a season where they change head coach, much like when they did win it 9 years ago.
Yeah, we have seen it before, haven't we? That remarkable run in 2012. You look at that squad that Chelsea have, and I know every side left in this competition will argue the same thing, but they have such talent in their depth in key positions. I think they've proved that given the way that they've been able to sustain the challenge across different competitions, gather momentum despite the matches coming thick and fast. They will believe, I think, and this result, despite losing the game, the progress in the tie and the manner in which it was achieved will only solidify that belief that they are capable, I think, of going all the way. And of everything that Thomas Tuchel has done since he's come in, notably, of course, strengthening the defence, but I think that the major achievement has been getting, as Kev kind of touched on, that the players to buy into this and believe that they can do it and they are capable of winning this whole thing.
Well, Chelsea will face the winners of Liverpool versus Real Madrid. Real Madrid taking on Liverpool on Wednesday night, 3-1 up from the first league in Madrid. The lead could have been more. Great injuries, John Bradley, at the back. I know you're commentating on this game elsewhere. Real Madrid depleted once again in defence, but how impressed were you by Real Madrid? You know, you predominantly cover Liverpool, of course, but how impressed were you by Real Madrid and that first leg performance?
I think that Vinicius Junior has been something of an enigma so far, but was very special in that game, and Liverpool gave them a couple of gifts, and they certainly had the ability to hurt Liverpool. And then in the second half, when Liverpool got the game back onto their side with Salah's goal, it looked as though they could get another, and then they were really punished. So, you know, despite all the injuries that Real Madrid had at the back, I thought Eder Militao was sensational in the game. And you know, they'll be under pressure at Anfield, no doubt, tomorrow night, but they will feel they have enough to get through, even with that next injury that we've had to Lucas Vazquez.
How big was the win against Aston Villa at the weekend?
Yeah, that last-minute goal by Trent Alexander-Arnold popping up on the left wing to pop one in the 94th minute was huge. Ending that six-match run where Liverpool have been beaten at home. And, you know, they'll hope that will get them back on the front foot. Obviously, their problems are still at the heart of their defence, where they're down to their fourth, fifth, sixth choice defenders. But they do still have a lot of talented players going forward. And you feel it might be the night that, you know, the likes of Thiago really need to express themselves if they are to have any chance of overturning that.
Real Madrid come into off the back of a win in the Clásico against Barcelona, of course, in La Liga as well, winning by 2-1. Kevin, the other game, Dortmund against Manchester City. City without Aguero, he does not travel to Germany. Dortmund have their injury issue. Sancho again misses out. What shape did Dortmund go into that second leg? Because they were good in the first leg. They were good in Manchester.
I thought they were surprisingly good, Rob, actually. I thought they were very competitive. They deserved their equaliser when it came. It was an excellent goal that they scored. My worry about them is the fragility of the defence, because they won at Stuttgart at the weekend, 1-3-2. Ansgar Knauf, very exciting young player, got the winner. But for the late equaliser Stuttgart scored, the defence just melted. And I just don't think they're capable, and I might be wrong, I might seem very silly soon, but I just don't think they're capable of that complete 90-minute performance that we'll see them go through.
OK, coverage on Wednesday night on UEFA.com and the Champions League app of Liverpool, Real Madrid, full match commentary. Let's get man of the matches as well. First of all, John Bradley on Paris Saint-Germain Bayern.
Just for the fact he's still not lost a two-legged tie in the UEFA Champions League, Keylor Navas deserves the man of the match award tonight.
We'll take that one. Phil Blacker watching Chelsea versus Porto.
Found this one a difficult one. It was such a collective effort for Chelsea, but I thought Jorginho probably gets the nod. He was excellent everywhere for Chelsea.
And Kev, you get unsung hero.
I'm going to go for Idrissa Gueye. He was fantastic in the midfield for Paris tonight.
That's all we have time for this evening. Thank you very much, gents. We'll be back on Wednesday, the 14th of April, from 8 p.m. CET for more live quarter-final second leg action with full commentary of Liverpool versus Real Madrid from Anfield, as well as live update of Borussia Dortmund versus Manchester City. And don't forget to download our Matchday Live podcast shortly after every single night via your favourite podcast provider. But for now, from me and the rest of the Champions League Matchday Live team, it's goodbye. Yeah.
You've been listening to UEFA Champions League Matchday Live.